This is the RaidersBlog.com podcast. I am your host, Taylor Armacino. The guy on the Skype line with me is Bleacher Report's lead AFC West blogger and owner of RaidersBlog.com, Christopher Hansen. As the season starts, we're thinking we might have some new listeners tuning in, and so just a reminder, you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. You can find us at RaidersBlog.com, and you can find me on Twitter at T Armacino, A-R-M-O-S-I-N-O, and he's at Chris Hansen, NFL, Hansen with an E. So we have a lot of stuff to get into. We've been on a little 2-3 week hiatus throughout the preseason. Let's recap the preseason real quick. The Raiders got off to a good start beating Dallas in the opening game, but then they lost 3 straight games to Chicago, New Orleans, and Seattle, and they didn't look all that great in those games. Now, you know, there's a couple shenanigans with the roster cutting that we're going to talk about. The first one, you know, being, you know, I think what everybody was kind of laughing at and pointing out was that the Raiders kept 2 punters and ended up, you know, getting rid of a defensive end who, you know, didn't look great, but he was okay. David Bass in preseason had, you know, some nice pass rushing bursts. I think he had a strip sack in one of the games. They had the fiasco with the 2 punters, and then also they got rid of their 4th-round pick, Tyler Wilson. They cut him, and then, you know, they got him back on practice squad, but, you know, it's kind of unheard of. It's not unheard of, but, you know, it's rare for a 4th-round pick to kind of flame out like that. So, Chris, you know, what are your overall impressions on, you know, that little roster fiasco that we had here at the end of the preseason, and then we'll talk about Dennis Allen after that?
Well, you know, I think that what they did was a little bit silly because they held on to a 4th quarterback for an extra day, only to cut on the following day. They did the same with the punter. You could say that maybe they were trying to make a trade or something, but realistically, no one's going to make that kind of trade at this stage, especially not for a punter or for a backup quarterback. I mean, you're just not going to see that typically. So, if that's what they're holding out hope for, then really they should have started earlier. And then when they made the cuts, just let all of those guys go because, chances are that guys are going to slip through the cracks easier with everybody hitting the wire at the same time than a day later. A day later, less guys on the wire. People are going to see those guys. It's really a really strange thing to do. I mean, it was 4 quarterbacks, 2 punters. They kept 2, as it is, they kept 2 fullbacks and 4 tight ends, which is just abnormal to keep that many. I predicted they'd keep 4 tight ends, but not 2 fullbacks. Because I figured if you keep 2 fullbacks, you only keep 3 tight ends. But apparently they have a use for those guys, probably because the offensive line is so shaky. But, you know, all those things, the way that they constructed their roster, really strange. You know, they lost David Bass in the process, and they ended up having to claim a guy to help on the defensive line. Now, that guy that they claimed, I think, is a good, maybe a better fit for what the Raiders need right now. But the point is, they could still claim him and made a move elsewhere to claim him, because you claim players that you want. There's plenty of guys that, you know, the Raiders could have got rid of. You release Bass a day later, maybe the Bears claim somebody else, and Bass, you know, goes unclaimed because, you know, the Bears weren't exactly at the top of the waiver order, which means he went through, you know, several teams before getting claimed. Then maybe he clears waivers. Maybe you get him on the practice squad. All those things could have been in play. So, really, I think it was a misunderstanding of the way that, you know, miscalculation, we call it, from the Raiders. And really, I think it hurt them because I think they would have really liked to keep Bass on the practice squad. But I don't blame them for keeping Ryan Robinson ahead of him. I definitely think that they wanted him on the practice squad and ended up losing him because of their roster shenanigans, really, is what the best term for it, just because there was no reason to do what they did for that extra day. None at all. I mean, maybe I'm not privy to conversations they had about trading for a punter, but I think McKenzie has to know better than that.
Yeah, and
everybody knew that they were going to release a punter. I mean, come on.
Right, and, you know, that's the thing. The punt, you know, if you're going to float the trade angle, which was, you know, kind of what people were thinking, that they were maybe trying to hold out Cluey or Wilson for a trade. I can kind of understand it with Wilson, given that he's a quarterback and he was a 4th-round pick, and, you know, you could maybe, you know, one of these kind of Green Bay teams that, you know, was kind of in the market for a backup quarterback, you could look at them and say, hey, you're lower down on the waiver wire. You know, maybe you want to trade for him before we get rid of him. But, you know, to be holding out on two punters for a trade, I mean, I think the last time punters got traded was 05, and they got traded for each other. And you're not going to trade a punter for a punter. You know, I mean, nobody's going to give up a draft pick for Chris Cluey. And so, you know, I can see where you could understand the trade angle from the quarterback's perspective, but from the punting perspective, it doesn't make any sense.
No, it doesn't. And here's the other thing. When they did cut Tyler Mullen, he went on claim. They could have just done that the first day. Kept a guy that they thought was at greater risk, and then cut Tyler Wilson the first day and let him go through waivers and done the exact same thing as they did. And the punter thing made no sense at all. So really, they just screwed themselves over twice over. What they could have done, in my opinion, if they still wanted all four quarterbacks, which I can understand them doing. I mean, I can get that sentiment, but it could have just as easily. The separation between Wilson and McGloin was really not that much. They could have just as easily released McGloin, let him back through waivers, and sent him to the practice squad. I think the only reason they didn't want to do that is because basically he did beat out Wilson this preseason. And you know, they wanted to save face on their whole merit-based roster decisions. I'm fine with that. Just cut Wilson the first day. Cut both of them the first day, keep Bass, then try to sneak Bass through later if that's what you wanted to do, or cut them all at the same time. If you end up losing Bass or one of them, that happens, but chances are that's not going to happen, that all those things are not going to culminate together. I really think that it was one of those situations where they probably overanalyzed it just a little bit too much, and like, well, we'll release all these players, hope we sneak the guy through, and then we'll release the punter later because no one is going to be interested in that. I really believe that the trade angle was probably just to save some face, but I believe they thought about that. Oh, well, that'll just give us a roster spot to pick up a guy because we're certainly going to pick up a guy or two. And, keeping Wilson on the roster for a day was kind of to avoid the negative backlash, but of course there would have been negative backlash anyway because the Raiders kept waiting to announce these cuts. And when they did finally announce Wilson in the practice squad, it was a one-line press release, a one-line blurb on the website. We've signed Wilson to the practice squad. Like, so very unceremonious. And I've said all along that I thought Allen was, that the Raiders really didn't really help Wilson by not giving him any snaps in training camp. And overall, I mean, I don't think they got enough snaps for anybody in the training camp. I don't think they moved quick enough to get snaps. You know, they didn't wear pads a lot, so that should mean that they were working at a feverish pace. I don't really feel like they were doing that. So all those things culminated. It just seems like, I think the Raiders kind of fumbled this one. I mean, it doesn't mean that the whole situation's lost, and maybe Wilson never turns into anything, but I think they just kind of they faltered a little bit. And now they have to figure out, okay, how do we not make that mistake again? And that's part of the learning process, I think, for a GM and a head coach. But this is year two. There are mistakes that they shouldn't be making at this point.
Right. And, let's talk about Dennis Allen because, you and I were talking before the podcast and you kind of just went into it a little bit. He's been put in a bad situation both years he's been here. I mean, obviously this year there's no talent on the team, and last year was really a lost year from the beginning. But he's not, making a great case for himself, getting a third year. And I think you and I both agree that given what he's had to work with, we haven't really seen exactly what he can do. But, when you look at things like this roster fiasco, which Reggie also, has to assume some blame for, and, last year with the coaching situation, even though that was late in the process, all these kind of things are, adding up. What's your take on Allen? I mean, I don't think he's making things easy for himself.
No, he's not making things easy for himself at all. I mean, you look at a guy who, not a lot of expectations for this roster. People are really thinking the Raiders are going to go backwards from 4-12, which is amazing. And if this roster goes backwards, I mean, Mark Davis made it pretty clear that he wants to see progress from this team. They weren't competitive very much last year, except for in the four games that they won and maybe one other one. He wants to see improvement from this team. I mean, I've said all along, I think Allen needs 5 wins this year and he needs to be competitive in a lot of games, and you can't see a blowout every week. Hand-picked defense, that's Allen's baby right there. He hand-picked those guys, more or less, him with Reggie. You know, Reggie doesn't get absolved from blame, but, you know, considering the situation, terrible, but now it's time for Allen, you know, year two, a lot of roster turnover, being able to select your own players. I mean, at very least, you should see some, you know, improvement, some competitiveness. And if the Raiders don't, if we don't get that out of the Raiders this year, you know, Allen's put himself on the hot seat. And then, you know, with this whole quarterback controversy, not wanting to announce the starter, I mean, he's giving people fuel. I mean, he doesn't have to, but he's giving people now fuel to basically say, look, this guy doesn't really know what he's doing. And, you know, in this instance, he doesn't, it's hard to defend him. I mean, you can't defend him with this quarterback not wanting to announce the starter thing.
Yeah, and, you know, you can kind of see where he's coming from in terms of the fact that they're just such a bad team that, you know, at least for a week, maybe, you know, they get a little bit of competitive advantage. But at the same time, it's not like everybody knows Pryor's going to start. And even if, ever, you know, even if this really was a question, it's not like the Colts aren't going to prepare for having to play Pryor. You know, I mean, playing Flynn's not exactly like playing, you know, Peyton Manning. They don't have to prepare an extra for Flynn. I mean, it just seems like a, you know, pointless exercise at this point because everybody knows it's going to be Pryor. And they'd game plan for Pryor even if, you know, they started Flynn.
You know, yeah, I can see maybe not announcing it and trying to keep it a secret. And making people guess. But guess what? They weren't able to keep it a secret. It got leaked out. Several leaked sources. Vic Taffer had two sources. Ian Rapoport of NFL.com had two sources. Or maybe it's the same two sources, but still there's two sources that said it's going to be Pryor, whoever those may be. You know, and once it got out, the benefit now is gone. I mean, there's zero benefit to trying to keep anybody guessing. But as you said, there's not really any extra preparedness that you need to do for Matt Flynn. I mean, you prepare for the offense. You don't prepare necessarily for the player. You have to prepare for the player with Pryor because of his running ability, because that changes the offense. But with Flynn, that doesn't happen. So all the Colts really have to do is prepare for the Raiders' offense, prepare extra for Pryor, and then if Flynn were to magically, you know, get the start, that wouldn't change anything from their perspective because they already studied the offense, and he can't do anything that Pryor really couldn't do. If he could, then he'd be the starter, but that's not what the case is. So really all this is doing is making Allen now just waste his breath, waste his effort defending, and now, you know, he's defending, well, I didn't think we had got a competitive advantage out of it, I wouldn't do it. And Mike, what competitive advantage do you think you're going to get? Because I can guarantee you Chuck Pagano's not putting much effort or time into studying Matt Flynn. You know, and if the Raiders were to win, pull out the victory in Indianapolis on Sunday, it probably wouldn't be because they spent a few extra minutes on Flynn, even if they did. Nor will it be because they took a few minutes away from studying Pryor. That wouldn't be why the Raiders won. So this whole competitive edge thing, you know, it's like a coach's paranoia. Coaches have these ideas in their head that they can kind of play mind games when really it's so transparent that everybody knows what's going on. Colts won't be fooled. Raiders aren't fooling anybody. And, you know, when that happens, you're really just making yourself look like a fool, and that's what's going on here.
No, they've made a side shot of something that, you know, is not. There's no upside to it.
They didn't have to. Exactly. I mean, they made a side shot. They made it a thing. And now you're like, why? Now you question their decision-making. Like, why are they? Because I applaud them for going with Pryor, because that's the right call to make. But, you know, but then you're like, why are you making it a deal now? I mean, what is it? Why are you making it a sideshow? After the fourth preseason game, Allen said that the fourth preseason game didn't really factor in, which means they already knew after the third preseason game, pretty much, that it was going to be Pryor. They've known since then, I'm pretty sure, that this is what they were going to do, and that they were going to roll with Pryor pretty much for the whole season, which means this is it. I mean, it doesn't make sense to do it any other way.
Right.
Why go through a charade? You know, make the move, say Pryor's our starter, and move on, and you deal with this each situation as it comes. And it just, from a management perspective, and some of those things really, you know, it's kind of bother me because it's poor management, in a sense, because what kind of message are you sending to your team? You're not coming out and saying, this is our leader. You're saying, we're going to leave our leader in question until opening kickoff. Even though he's told the team, he's not telling the public. So, you know, the fans can't get excited about it. You know, there's all kinds of reasons why it just doesn't make sense. So it makes you start to question.
Well, yeah, and that's the other thing of this. I mean, I don't see the positive in doing it, because it even makes them look worse. Because, I mean, the Raiders already this year are, you know, one of the, you know, if you had to pick five franchises that are probably the laughing stocks of the league, you'd probably go, the Raiders, the Jets, Jacksonville, you know, Buffalo, and, you know, one other team. You know, it doesn't make them look good. I mean, I think if they'd come out and said, hey, you know what, you know, obviously we didn't have a great preseason. We're going to go with the younger guy who can have some, he has some upside, you know, we're going to be able to run a few different things. I think that's universally, everybody thinks that's the right move. And I think, you know, coming out and saying that would be a move that, you know, at least people would say, well, you know, at least they know somewhat what they're doing. You know, they still don't have any talent, but at least they're coming out and they made the right quarterback move. By doing this, I mean, not only you make this charade out of this, and it just makes them look bad. And I mean, it's like a total sack, you know, as you said, bad management. It's a total lack of self-awareness. It just makes them look like even more of a, you know, laughing stock than, you know, what they're probably going to be this year.
They come out after the fourth preseason game and say, we're going to start a fire. Everybody gives them a big hand, basically. Everybody pats them on the back. That's the right call. Everybody thought that. Pretty much after the third preseason game, we got them. But they come out and say it after the fourth preseason game. Everybody comes out and say, yeah, that was the right move. By waiting, and now it opens up question. I mean, there is no question, but it opens up now questions about your decision making and your management. You know, a big part about management and a big part about being in the NFL and being in the NFL, you know, spotlight is you need to manage perceptions. You know, if you're winning, you don't have to manage your perceptions as much. Your perceptions are going to be good if you're a winning team, and you can treat the media like dirt, which Bill Belichick does. But if you're losing, managing your perceptions are vitally important, because you need, as you know, in the NFL, unfortunately, they don't get many years to turn things around. Even though, you know, data suggests that they should get more time, they just don't. So you need to manage your perceptions outside of the organization to make sure that, you know, media and therefore majority of fans, because like it or not, the media influences what the fans think, are on your side. And there's not pressure to basically fire a guy. I mean, you look at North Turner in San Diego. I mean, every year they were confident that guy could get fired. Every year. And look, you know, they wasted, probably 3 years defending him and continuing to ride him and making stupid roster moves to try to give him the team that he needed. And he never could make it work. And I think he's a great offensive guy, but, you know, not a great head coach. And, you know, look, the fans were right. In that situation, the fans were right, and you burned 3 years and millions of dollars and all kinds of time. And guess what? You also, you know, because they didn't do it then, it also cost the GM his job.
Right.
Because he made moves for the head coach. He would have probably saved his job had he been a little bit quicker trigger on making. So, I mean, all I'm saying is that it's important for Allen to really manage perceptions. And I think he's really, with the last few roster moves the Raiders have made, and the perceptions already out there that the Raiders are going to be terrible. I mean, pretty much it's universal. You know, and maybe he's just like, screw it, I don't care. I probably got 1 year anyway, so I'm just going to do it my way. Maybe that's what it is, but you know, I don't see what he's got. He doesn't really have much to gain in this situation. You know, it really just makes himself look bad. And I don't like that because I do like him. So,
no, I do too. But
I think he's a good guy. I think he's a good guy. I think he's a solid football coach. But you know, this is going to be a situation where now managing a perception. You know, if he wants to get that third year, now he's going to have to let teams football do its talking, that could be really rough.
No, I agree, and it makes it look like, you know, now that he's over his head. And so, you know, we'll see what happens.
It makes it look like that, even if it's not the case.
Right.
I've had people tell me that, Allen, compared to a lot of head coaches, very organized, very smart, and, it seems like the coaches that he surrounded himself with are the same. The talent, obviously, isn't there yet, but, so there's good things. But this is a situation, regardless of whether I like Allen, regardless of what I think, you have to call it like you see it. And these recent moves are just silly, silly moves. I don't know what McKenzie and Allen were thinking with that. And I think it was just a case maybe that they overanalyzed something. And then, with this most recent thing, it's probably just a little bit of stubbornness, not wanting to realize that, I wanted to keep it a secret competitive edge. And like I said, I get that. But once it was public, should have just come out and said, yeah, he's our starter. We wanted to keep it a secret, but obviously that's no longer possible. So, yeah, he's our starter. We're going to roll with him. And then give somebody something new to print, Just because he's a starter week one doesn't mean he's the starter going forward. So Raiders can come out and say, yeah, he's the starter in week one and for the foreseeable future. That gives somebody something new to write about. So a lot of kinds of things they could have done that would have been better. Mistakes that they really shouldn't be making. And that's, I think, the biggest disappointment in all of it.
Yeah, no, I agree. And, I think with the perception, I think a good example of this was I was listening, there was the Bill Simmons report yesterday, and I think he was on with his cousin. And there's a 2-day podcast, maybe a 3-day, I remember, but they go through all the NFL teams and they do the over-unders or whatever. And, this is a good example of this. And I really like Bill Simmons. I think he's smart, but, Bill Simmons doesn't have the time. And very few people do to go through and really, I wouldn't trust Bill Simmons to tell me how good, Leslie Frazier is as a coach, for example. And he kind of goes, and they get to the Raiders and he talks about this little, thing he has with over-unders that a quarterback and coach are worth, X amount of wins. He says Dennis Allen's worth a win, and each quarterback they have is probably worth a win. So it's like a 2-1. And, I think we haven't really seen enough of Dennis Allen with, half-decent talent to really say whether he's, a 1 as a coach. But that's the perception. The perception is that he's a really bad coach that's, kind of in over his head. And, doing things like this absolutely, feeds that. And he hasn't done a whole lot recently to really, dispel that.
Yeah, and I think, there's only so much learning on the job that you can do before you can make mistakes, and you're going to make mistakes when you get put in a position like that. But you have to learn quick. You can't repeat them. And it's not just about learning specific mistakes, but avoiding them altogether. And I'll give you an example. Everybody knows the Greg Knapp hiring was a bad one. And they've obviously changed their approach, and they were willing to admit a mistake, and they've shown this organization has shown, okay, we're willing to admit mistakes. But ultimately, it still comes down to avoiding the mistakes entirely. And, not making this, it's not just about not making the same mistake. It's about avoiding the mistake. It's about avoiding mistakes, period. And I think, unfortunately, you're going to make mistakes. But it's about the number of them. And the Raiders can't afford them. They can't afford to be cutting their fourth round pick. Now, I do like the first 3 picks, obviously, but they need, now those guys need to be good. They need to be really good because, you start cutting fourth round picks, Hayden is average, CO is average, and Menelik is a career right tackle or something like that. That's not good enough for this team. They needed to do better than that. And they had a long time. They had their whole football operations working on it for, for the draft for over, for a whole year, pretty much. They were working on this draft, knowing how important it was. And so that wouldn't be good enough. Just wouldn't be good enough for this team. So they need to do better. They need to start avoiding mistakes and stop making so many mistakes. And, ultimately, the franchise, you can't demand accountability from a player to stop making mental mistakes and stop making communication errors and stop, making those kind of errors when you're really not doing it yourself.
Right.
We don't know, but I'm going to go ahead and make a small leap and say that if you're making these kind of decision mistakes, publicly with roster decisions, that kind of thing, then it might be going on the football field as well.
Right.
And that means that's a big problem. You have coaches making bad decisions on the football field. And that means they're not putting the players in a good position to be successful. And these are all parts of the NFL. So we don't know that yet. I'm not gonna leap to that conclusion, but I'm gonna say that is a possibility at this point. And that's the biggest concern in all this, is now we're starting to see heading into year two, we're getting a little bit of a more slice of who Dennis Allen is, who this regime is, and you know, up until this point, I think they've gotten a pass. And I think this year, from a roster perspective, they might still get a pass. But come next year, and maybe not for Dennis Allen, I don't know. Maybe not either one, I don't know, because I don't know how patient Mark Davis is. But you know, going into next year, you know, this year, borderline might be make or break, depending on how things go. And next year definitely is. And we're starting to get bigger slices of the pie. We might have a pretty good idea of which way it's going to go next year,
right,
if they get a chance. And maybe Mark Davis will too, and not let him get that far. I don't know. But overall, I think the more information we get, the better. Better for fans. And, you know, the Raiders need to start thinking a little bit smarter in terms of the way that they operate and do things. You know, I can understand somewhat, you know, doing, just always making decisions on what's best for the football team, but you also have to realize that outside of the football, you know, junkie coaches and personnel guys, the little bubble of you know, what they do, what's best for the team isn't always about necessarily even about you know, what's best for, you know, the roster or, you know, a competitive advantage or whatever. Sometimes, like I said, it's about managing that perception of you, so that way you get a maximum amount of time to make sure that all those things that you are doing to help the roster, you know, you have an opportunity to see those things through.
Yeah, and you know, the Tyler Wilson thing is a good example of that, because as you were saying, they could have easily cut McGoin. McGoin would have passed through waivers. I mean, hell, Wilson did. And then that way you don't get this whole, you know, charade story in the media about, oh, well, the Raiders just missed on a fourth-round pick. And then, well, Cohn writes some article saying they need to put bags over their heads because they missed on a fourth-rounder. You know, it's like kind of stuff like that where it's like you could have done the, you know, little, I mean, with a third-string quarterback, when you have two guys that are, you know, going to play more, obviously, I mean, they'd be, you know, it's like a pretty clear 1-2, and then you have McGoin and Wilson. Is it really that imperative, you know, to keep McGoin on the roster over Wilson, you know, initially? I mean, it's exactly what you're talking about. They have no idea how to control the, you know, public perception, the media perception of themselves.
I mean, I guess, like I said, I think that might have been the case overthought it a little bit. If they wanted to hold to the McGoin beat out Wilson, and I'm fine with that, then just release Wilson on the first cut day. Don't wait to do it, okay? Because it turned into a bigger story. It wasn't like Raiders cut fourth-round pick with all their cuts. It was Raiders cut fourth-round pick. That's it. You know, there's nothing to water that down. It becomes this big story, and if they did want to get him through the practice squad, it reduces that chance, because now, you know, Raiders waiver wire, it's just Wilson. I mean, you know, there's less guys on it. So, you know, that's the kind of thing that I don't understand. I can understand doing that and thinking, well, they could have thought, well, if we keep Wilson and cut McGoin, even though if something, a quarterback were to go down, we would probably, you know, elevate McGoin ahead of Wilson. They might have thought, well, if we do that, we're being hypocritical. I get that. So just release Wilson on the first day. It didn't make sense to keep him an extra day. And I don't understand what they had to gain in keeping him for an extra day.
Right.
It could have kept another guy for an extra day, like a Damon Bass, that, you know, might have made more sense to do that. You know, if they didn't have any intention of keeping either of them, they wanted them both on the practice squad, it's okay to release below 53. You know, it's like they're like, well, we'll go down to 53 only, and then we'll cut some extra weight. Well, they could have gone below 53, because then when you claim a guy, you don't have to release a guy. I mean, you know, it's okay to do that, especially when they probably knew that they were going to claim a guy, because I didn't think there was any chance that they were going to go into the season with four quarterbacks or two punters. You know,
and two fullbacks.
And two fullbacks and four tight ends. I mean, that, that was weird too. I mean, that's still a little weird. I agreed with the four tight ends, but then you keep two fullbacks as well. That's a lot of meat, and I'm assuming it's only because of the offensive line that they're going to do that. But the offensive line issues. But you know, there's just some weird stuff that they did, and you know, stuff they really didn't have to do. But anyway, let's move on a little bit. We can talk about the Colts game a little bit and move on to that stuff, because I mean, I think right now roster's more or less set. Shenanigans now will be to a minimum, I believe, once they actually do announce who the starter is going to be. And you know, now they can actually focus on really what they're getting paid to do is put together this roster so they can play these games. And we get to see the first one on Sunday.
Yeah, so let's talk about this Colts game. I mean, they're going to Indianapolis. Pryor's going to be the quarterback. You know, Indianapolis made the playoffs last year, and Andrew Luck, I mean, I love Andrew Luck probably as much as anybody. I mean, I think he'd be great. But, you know, it's not exactly like the Colts are really, you know, I wouldn't call them a powerhouse at this point. I mean, if you look at the regression model for NFL teams, they're the team this year that everyone, you know, is the hot pick, you know, kind of regress them and the Vikings. And, you know, I mean, if you look at last season, the Colts won a lot of really close games, which has proven to be, you know, basically a coin flip. You know, Detroit last year ended up on the wrong side of that. The Colts ended up on the right side of it. You know, that's the difference between, what were the Colts, 11-5, I think, and then, you know, Detroit was 4-12. So it's not like they're going to play, you know, a real powerhouse team. How do you feel about the Raider chances in this game? I mean, I still think they lose the game, but, you know, I don't think it's like, they're not going into, put it this way, they're not going into Denver week one. You know, it's not like that. You know, I think it's not, I'm not sure it's a winnable game, but it's not a game where, you know, I expect them to get blown out by 50 points.
Yeah, I mean, it's a road game. And yeah, the Colts are, I think, the Colts are obviously a superior team. But I do think the Colts are, I do have them pegged as one of the disappointing teams this year. And I do like Andrew Luck as well, but I also think that, you know, they are changing offensive coordinator there. You know, second offensive coordinator in 2 years, and I like who they selected, you know, Pat Hamilton, but, you know, there's still some of an adjustment period with that. And I didn't really love some of the offensive some of the personnel moves that they made.
They handed out some really awful contracts. I mean, the Eric Walden contract was mind-blowing.
Yeah, they did some interesting stuff. I mean, I think what was mind-blowing about it was the amounts. Right. They did keep the year short, so they don't have huge commitments in there. But I do think that they probably do... For a fall back to earth a little bit. I mean, if you look at the strength of schedule, you know, you look at those kind of things, strength of schedule and all the post games. I mean, I think they were closer to a 6-7 win team in that area than 11-5, which is where they finished. So I think they were kind of the benefit of those kind of things. And you know, Andrew Luck went, I think, 4 fourth quarter comebacks, 7 game winning drives last year. You know, you don't always get those opportunities in games. If things, it only takes a little bit, your defense being a little worse or your offense not being quite as productive to change that. So I think Luck will actually, his stats will be better, but they'll lose more games. So I do think, at least from the Raiders' perspective, this isn't a game that, the biggest thing is it's on the road. And, you know, road opener, prior second start, first road start. You look at that and you say, well, you know, this is not one that's likely to go on the Raiders' favor. But I think one of the reasons that Pryor was selected to be the quarterback, and one of the reasons why he makes sense for the Raiders is he gives the Raiders a chance to win. He tilts the, you know, I think with a running quarterback, you never know quite what you're going to get. You're going to get like a 50-50 toss-up type situation with them a lot. You know, Mike Vicks, I mean, I don't judge quarterbacks by their win-loss record, but if you do look at Mike Vick, you know, in his career, several different teams, he's kind of like a 500 quarterback. He's going to make some mistakes that hurt you and make you lose a game, but he's also going to keep you in that game, and then he's also going to win some games for you with his athleticism. So I think that's what kind of thing Pryor can do. If Pryor has a great extra time to prepare in Pryor's first road. So I don't think it'll be a win, but I think the Raiders could definitely keep it closer than people think. I mean, I looked at the Bleacher Report expert picks, which we're coming out with tomorrow. You know, I looked at all the experts. I think it's everybody picked the Colts, but I think I was actually the one knowing that Pryor was going to start to have the score. I think I had an 8-point differential, and everybody else had a multiple score differential in the game. And I think Raiders could keep it closer than people think. I still think, you know, it might be them clawing back into it late. You know, it's going to depend on Pryor. I mean, the offense will go as Pryor goes. And then also, I think people underestimate having a healthy McFadden in a power for blocking scheme, even with the offensive line a little bit banged up. I think people underestimate that. I did a study a while back on just looking at some of the way that he performs in games and things and how important he is to the offense. And, you know, him alone, I mean, he could get you to 7 wins. Him alone, if he's as productive. Now, we don't know if that's going to be the case, but when McFadden was most productive, he didn't have the best offensive line. Hugh Jackson didn't have the best offensive line for those power blocking years, and he was still able to get a lot out of McFadden. So, you know, I think there's a lot here that isn't totally being considered. People look at the Raiders as a whole and how badly they looked in preseason and these kind of things. You know, and then make a decision. So it's going to be closer than people think, definitely.
Yeah, and, you know, the Colts, their front seven's okay, but it's not great. I mean, you have Walden and Mathis aren't exactly, you know, I wouldn't pin those two guys as guys I'd want, you know, stopping the run as much. You know, I mean, Anger and Freeman are okay inside, but it's not a great front seven. I mean, you know, again, I'm not expecting the Raiders to win, but, you know, I don't think they're going to get, you know, shut out. You know, I don't think they're going to get blown out. I mean, I think, you know, 8 to 10
points. They could. I mean, it's possible, but I agree with you.
Yeah, and, you know, and so, it'll be interesting. What do you think about the defense going up against Luck? And, I mean, Luck's really good, but, I mean, even last year, I mean, I think the numbers had it where he had, I think, 7 dropped interceptions, and so, I mean, he did get a little lucky, not to make some stupid pun, but, I mean, how do you think the defense matches up against Luck?
Well, I'll say this. The defense... they need to do a better job about communicating and knowing where the responsibilities are. But that said, we haven't really... we saw from only a glimpse, again, that fourth preseason game, what the entire healthy defensive unit looked like together. And it was obviously still a very vanilla, especially in the fourth preseason game, vanilla defense. We haven't seen what the Raiders are going to do. We haven't really seen what they're totally going to do with Steel Moore. I know that they're going to have him rush the passer. They're going to try to have him do a lot of different things. You know, we haven't seen really Lamar Houston go to work at right defensive end and see what they're going to do there. And then obviously the improved secondary, which should be improved. How much, I don't know, but it should be improved. And, you know, especially in nickel, I believe that they should be improved. And, you know, we haven't really seen that. So, I'm cautiously optimistic that they'll look a little bit better than they have in the preseason, because they look really bad.
Yeah, I am too.
Really bad, yeah.
Yeah, I am
so
too.
I'm cautiously optimistic that they'll be able to put it together a little bit more with a game plan, obviously with a full game plan, and that, you know. Whether they're able to get any pressure, though, I think is the big question. I think they can cover, but you can only cover so long, and they need to be able to get to the quarterback. And I'm not so sure they can do that.
Right, that'll be the issue, I think, all season with the defense, because, you know, health pending, I think, you know, the back sevens, you can do some things with that back seven. I'm with the linebackers and the DBs. I kind of like that group. I think the front seven's going to be the problem. You know, it's really interesting to see, you know, as you mentioned, how they do what they do with C.O. Moore, because in the preseason and a lot of their nickel sets, they had him as the, you know, fourth defensive end, you know, pass rusher kind of guy. I mean, I think they're really relying on him. I think he's going to get a lot of snaps, you know, rushing the passer from that defensive end spot. And I think, you know, it'll be really interesting to see in this first game how he looks and, you know, if, you know, it looks like he can be a reliable guy moving forward to get at least somewhat constant pressure on the quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, I think they like him a lot, and I think that he can do it. You know, obviously in the preseason, in limited snaps, we didn't necessarily see great pressure, but I think they think he can do it. And I think they can create some blitz pressure. And obviously blitz puts this pressure on the secondary, but I think they feel like they have a secondary now that they'll be able to cover long enough to make that work out for them. So we'll see how it goes for them. You know, this is a 9 of 11 new starters on defense. I mean, that's pretty significant turnover on defense. And so we can't necessarily say anything about last year's defense is going to be about this year's defense. What I can say is that we don't know yet where that pass rush is going to come from. I mean, we have an idea of who they want it to come from, but we don't know where it's going to come from. And so, yeah, you look at all that and you say, you know, I don't think necessarily this is going to be a favorable thing for the Raiders in terms of, you know, stopping Andrew Luck consistently. But sometimes you get these defenses like the Raiders that they can't necessarily stop you, but they keep you out of the end zone, they force a few turnovers, and that changes the game.
Right.
I think that's the kind of defense the Raiders need to be successful this year.
Yeah, I agree. You know, the bend but don't break. You know, I think the other big storyline, I guess, on defense, well, obviously you have Woodson, but, you know, I think he'll probably be fine, is Hayden, obviously. And he's not going to be starting on the outside. He's going to play in the nickel, which is fine. I mean, you know, with rookie defensive backs, especially when you're a bad team like the Raiders, it's good to bring them along a little slower, I think. And it's not that he's not going to play at all. I mean, the Colts are going to use a lot of three receiver sets with T.Y. Hilton in the slot. He'll play a lot.
He'll play 60% of the time.
Right. And, you know, T.Y. Hilton's a good player. I mean, Hayden will definitely have his work cut out for him. I mean, you know,
I think he's actually going to be covering DHB, to be honest with you.
You think DHB will play in the slot more?
Well, he's not going to be in the slot. Hayden's going to play outside. He'll be the nickelback, but Porter will slide to the slot inside.
Well, that makes sense.
They'll move guys around, too, to get the matchups they want. So, you know, it doesn't mean that he's going to be covering DHB the whole game, but I do think that you'll see him covering DHB and Reggie Wayne a little bit more than you might see him covering T.Y. Hilton, who will probably be used in the slot. But I think they'll also occasionally use DHB in the slot and Reggie Wayne in the slot. And so they'll move guys around a little bit. You know, teams aren't locked in lining up the receivers in any one particular place. So, but the point is, he's going to have some help. If you play him outside, he has the help of the sideline. Can use the sideline to help him, and he's got some safety help. Where that nickel guy in the slot doesn't have that help, and I'm not a big Tracy Porter fan.
Nor am I.
So I'm a little more concerned about him playing in the slot receiver than I am Hayden being outside. I think Hayden will be fine. You know, he's a rookie. He's gonna make some mistakes. But I think the thing about Hayden, the thing they liked about Hayden was he has great ball skills. He's gonna make some plays. And we even saw in the Chicago game, you know, took that pass away from Brandon Marshall. And really, if the defender, I don't remember who it was, one of the linebackers, had a little bit better hands, it would have been an interception. And, you know, impact plays are going to be huge. And so I think that's what they saw in him and what they hope he can do on the football field. So, you know, if he makes plays, I don't think they can realistically keep him off the field. And he'll earn more and more playing time as the season goes on, is my feeling on it. And, you know, I feel like Porter, you know, in relatively short order, will probably give up some snaps to some of the other quarterbacks, like Bowers or Chukwu or somebody, because I'm just not a big fan. He makes too many lapses, you know, mental lapses, and you know, it's just too much for me. And I think over time, Raiders might realize that too and say, you know what, let's give these younger guys a chance. And it's pretty much what happened with Tracy Porter in Denver last year, so I kind of see the history repeating itself.
Yeah, and you know, he did not have a good preseason at all. And you know, I mean, obviously that doesn't matter too much, but I mean, you would have liked to see him play better. I mean, I think, you know, Pro Football Focus rated him with a -4 rating, which was the worst of the Raiders' defensive backs, slightly ahead of Reggie Smith, who got cut. And so I think, you know, Porter's definitely one of these guys who's on a hot seat because, I mean, you know, the Raiders don't have a whole lot of depth on their roster, but one spot where they do have a little bit of depth, I think, is the, you know, the defensive backfield, because I think, you know, you can move Hayden into that spot, as you mentioned, you can move Phillip Adams into that spot, and they have Chukwu and Taiwan Jones, you know, I mean, there's a little bit of depth there. And so, you know, if he struggles early, he could be an early candidate to not only lose his starting spot, but to lose his job altogether. And so, you know, I think...
I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, I think Jenkins, Mike Jenkins on the other side, I think he struggled a little bit, but when I saw him camp and some of the preseason games, he looks a lot. He looks like he's not going to make. He's not going to be mental. He's going to be around them. He's going to be around the ball. He's not going to make big mental errors. He's not going to get burned severely as much. He might give up some receptions. He's going to be in the area to make a tackle. A little bit. That's kind of how Hasselio Hansen was last year. Always in the area. Didn't allow a lot of big yards. They allowed a lot of reception. I think Jenkins will be closer to that. But that you can tolerate. Again, with the bend don't break thing, you'll tolerate that. But you can't have guys getting burning you. I think that's part of the reason they felt like Tracy Ford was better in the slot is because he's going to have linebackers there to help safeties behind him. So you won't get burned as much. Those guys are going to be running underneath routes more often. If they run down the seam, it's going to be picked up by Woodson or a safety or something like that. So I think that's probably why they decided to do this. And so maybe he'll look a little bit better there than I'm expecting. But overall, I think he's a little bit suspect, and I like Hayden outside a lot more. But, you know, we'll see how it goes. You know, as the season progresses, I mean, these are things for the Raiders that are definitely fluid.
No, absolutely. So, I mean, what was your predicted score for this game?
I don't remember. I think it was 31-23, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I'm going to go 34-21. So okay. I think we're like the same ballpark there. So
yeah, and I think you know, I looked at okay, so how bad was this defense last year? You know, I expect some improvement. You look at, you know, 32 points a game is good ballpark, and this is just how I processed it. And then I said, you know what, you know, I don't think the Raiders were quite a 23-point offense. Last year, you know, ballpark, but with Fryer, I think he's going to make enough plays to get Jankowski in field goal range and maybe get a few scores more. So overall, that's kind of how I processed it a little bit. And, you know, score prediction, you never know. It could be 13-10 for all we know.
Right, and you know, and I think we saw enough from Olsen too. I feel more confident in his play calling than I did with Greg Knapps, and so, you know,
no doubt about it. I was told it was Olsen's job to lose. It was Olsen's job if he wanted it before he even was hired. And you know, I was like, okay, you know, didn't really know much of Olsen, and I was told that, you know, smart offensive guy, but wasn't a big fan of his play calling. Is kind of the way it was portrayed to me. And I, you know, so far I've been pleasantly surprised with his design of things. And obviously he's holding a lot back. But the way that he's had, you know, designed the offense for Fryer and different things, I mean, I've been impressed with that. You know, obviously I think it sucks because I do think that to some extent he's had to expand the package of plays that he had for Fryer into being a bigger part of the offense. So obviously a lot of the work that he's done is going to be pushed off to the side a little bit. But I think he's a smart guy. You know, the question will be is how good is he adjusting on the fly? The Raiders were woefully bad at adjusting last year. And really, you know, sure, Carson Palmer could throw garbage time yards and get a score here and there in garbage time. But, you know, when the game was still hanging in the balance, the play calling was questionable at best. So I think that'll be the question on Olsen, but I do like what I've seen so far and the way he's using personnel. Some of the play designs I saw in the preseason looked improved, although, like I said, they're holding a lot back. But overall, looked better to me. And I think the other thing, the big question is how is he going to use McFadden? Because, you know, getting McFadden, a productive McFadden, is going to be huge.
Right, I mean, he's the guy that's going to have to set up the, you know, the rest of the offense, pretty much. It's going to be him and Pryor, and, you know, I think they'd be smart to kind of come out early and, you know, maybe try some of the pistol stuff and the read option kind of stuff and see if they can maybe squeeze one or two, you know, big plays early in the game and see if that helps them, you know, lets Olsen, you know, settle back into the game plan a little bit through the rest of the game, you know, just, you know, with the threat of the run, you know, having proved they could run early in the game. You know, if they come out and get stuffed early, then, you know, they're really in trouble because then, you know, the Colts aren't on their feet as much, you know.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that some coaches do is they come out and they kind of for the first quarter or whatever, they kind of go opposite game plan a little bit. If they're playing us to run the ball a lot, they come out throwing. If they're playing us to throw the ball, they'll come out running. A little bit. However, I think they could do it. So I wouldn't be surprised to see some. I definitely think we're going to see a lot of pistol. I think we're going to see a lot of pistol in the NFL this year. I think we'll see a lot of pistol out of the Raiders, especially with Pryor. I definitely see a lot of that. Interestingly enough, I don't think Pryor, so far at least, I don't think they've showed the read option. I mean, they showed it a few times, but I don't think that's where Pryor is getting most of his yards. It's mostly coming on the scramble. So if they can design a way to get Pryor, big yardage, and he can certainly beat one defender, that's gonna help everybody. And it'll help McFadden as well. I think the read option will really help McFadden as well. So it's gonna be I'll say this, the Raiders, they might not be good this year, but with Pryor they're definitely more interesting, and there's no doubt about that.
No, absolutely. So we both picked the Raiders to lose this first week to the Colts. We'll see what happens. Let's go through now and kind of just go through the schedule real quick, and we'll kind of do a general, win-loss prediction. We'll discuss it before we get on out of here. It's not a real favorable schedule. They play the AFC South, the NFC East, and then obviously the AFC West, and their extra games are at the Jets and Pittsburgh, I think, with the last place schedule. No, third place schedule, because Kansas City had the first pick. So they start off with the Colts. We said loss. Then, I think the earlier schedule is probably better than that late schedule. I mean, then they have Jacksonville at home, which is a winnable game. Even a game that they probably should win.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And then they go at Denver, which is a loss. They have the Redskins in week 4. That game's interesting just because, we don't know exactly where RG3 is. It'll be interesting to see how his knee holds up the first couple weeks of the season.
I think it'll be fine.
I do, too. I think, if you're looking at that, you probably want to play Washington later in the year. So they got Washington at home week 4. That's probably a loss. Then San Diego at home week 5. I mean, I think that's winnable. I don't love the Chargers this year.
Definitely winnable.
Yeah. Then at Kansas City, how are you on the Chiefs? I mean, you cover the Chiefs. I'm pretty high on the Chiefs this year. I mean, I think they're probably about a 9-10 win team.
Yeah, they look pretty good. I would temper expectations a little bit because I don't think the depth is quite there. I got them paid, at 7 wins. But with a 2-win margin of error, I think they could win 9 games and be in the playoffs. But it's always possible that they exceed those expectations. I'm not, claiming that I know for sure, but I think just you have to, when you look at the whole season, if you project everything assuming 100% health, yeah, I could see them being even better than that, but you always have to project the potential injuries, a guy out here and there, that kind of thing. And so, I think 7 wins is a realistic look for them, but I definitely think they're going to be in a lot of games too, even if they, and again, we talked about, how luck can factor into which way it goes on a close game. Sometimes they're a little bit of a crapshoot on who wins that game. So it depends on how it kind of falls for them. But I definitely think they're going to be really competitive. I think they'll win a fair amount of games. So I think they'll be in the conversation late in the season for sure. It's going to depend on their ability to stay healthy. So I definitely think the Raiders going to Kansas City is going to be a tough game for them to win.
Yeah, see, I think you and I mean, you know them much better than I do, but I think we're going to disagree on this one, because I think, you look at their defense, and I mean, there's a lot of talent there. I mean, they got two really good pass rushers, and I like Dontari Poe in the middle, and I think their DBs are pretty good. I mean, that's probably, a top 10 defense, if they all stay healthy and play well? I mean, top 10, maybe top 5? And then, I think Alex Smith is a pretty sizable upgrade over Castle. I mean, I think at least, I think you hear a lot of people say this, the difference between going from an abysmal quarterback to at least like an above average quarterback is a much higher gap than going from an average quarterback to an elite quarterback. I mean, being able to run your offense, with some functionality, I think is really an underrated thing. And, you know, I think Andy Reid's a much better coach than Romeo Crennel, and I think a change of scenery does him good. So, I think they're going to be a little better than, I think, you know, 7 wins. I think I like them more around the 10 range.
Yeah, I mean, I always hesitate when you talk about a roster. I mean, they only kept 23 guys on the roster that were on the roster last year. 23, that's it. That's pretty low from my historical standards. Even the Raiders last year kept 31. The Raiders still have 15 from Alabama's team. So just to give you kind of a frame of reference on how low that is. And so, yeah, they have some good pieces. I do like their prospects. If everybody stays healthy, but I think with Alex Smith, he needs that good coaching to execute, but he is a little bit of a limited quarterback. So defenses, especially the good ones, are going to clamp down on him. And he's going to need Jamal Charles to really carry the team. And he's capable of that, obviously. But you know, there's just too many. I find myself saying, well, if these things happen, there's a few too many ifs for me to put them in the 10 win territory. I could see that, you know, 8 wins plus or minus 2, which means, you know, everything goes right, as you say, then they can get hit 10. Overall, I'm just not confident enough in the depth of the team to get there.
Yeah, that's fair. Okay, so after they're at Kansas City week 6, the Raiders have a bye week, and then week 8, they're Pittsburgh at home, who they beat last year. And, you know, a lot of people are high on Pittsburgh this year. I'm not super high on Pittsburgh. I mean, I don't see exactly. I mean, I think they have a lot of question marks at receiver. Heath Miller obviously is injured to start the year. You know,
not offense any better than last year.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Maybe running back, but then you know now he's out for 6 weeks at least. I mean, where did they really improve? I fail to see where they really improved this offseason.
No, I agree with you, and so I think. Is that a win? I don't know if that's a winnable game with this Raiders team. Is it? I mean, they beat them last year. I mean, I don't know.
The Raiders, for whatever reason, always play the Steelers tough.
Yeah.
And it is at home. And you said, and this is coming off a bye, is it not?
Right. Week 8 coming off a bye, yeah.
Week 8 coming off a bye week. You know, I mean, it's going to depend on the Raiders' health, obviously, at that point. But I think it's a winnable game.
Yeah, I think it is too.
I'm not gonna say that I'll predict it to be a win, but I think it's a winnable game for the Raiders, sure.
Right. We're in agreement. And then the next week, Philadelphia comes to Oakland. This is an interesting one because, obviously, I mean, I think Chip Kelly's going to be great. I think his offense translates better to the NFL than a lot of casual fans probably assume. But what do you think about this game?
I'm not quite sure about the game necessarily, but I do know that I agree with you on Chip Kelly. I think he's going to be a good coach in this league. I think he's got the kind of pedigree that you look for in a successful NFL head coach. What I do know is their defense is really suspect.
Especially against the run. No, you're absolutely right.
Yes. And if McFadden's healthy at that point, Fryer is, you know, for better or worse, still being able to run. You know, I could see it being a winnable game for the Raiders just because of that. I think that the Raiders will have some tough time stopping the Eagles' offense, but you know, we don't know. Michael Vick gets hurt a lot, so we don't know where he's going to be at that point. Getting later in a little bit towards the second half of the season, what kind of injuries come into play? But you know, I want to say that it's a win possibility. I don't think the Eagles are going to quite be as good. I think Chip Kelly will be good, but I think he needs some more time to rebuild the defense. So I'm going to call that a winnable game for the Raiders.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, they play the NFC East, and the NFC East is really odd this year. I mean, all the teams are kind of in this 7, 8, 9, you know, at best maybe 10-win range. You know what I mean? I mean, Dallas, they all just seem, you know, they're about the same. I mean, there's not a real elite team. I don't think any of the defenses in that division are really very good. I think, you know, those interdivision games should be fun. I think there'll be a lot of high scoring and stuff, but I don't think any of those four teams are really a standout elite team, you know, especially to start the year.
Yeah, I like the Cowboys the most, but can you really count on the Cowboys? I mean, you know.
I'd like him more if DeMarco Murray would stay healthy. I'm scared of what they have behind him.
Right.
Yeah, so anyways.
Anyway.
Yeah, so then after the Philly game, they go at the Giants, probably a loss.
A loss. traveling that far, the Raiders have a horrible track record.
Right, and then they go at Houston the next week, which is probably a loss. Houston's a super good regular season team. Then the next week they have Tennessee at home. And Tennessee, I mean, it'll be interesting to see how they are. I mean, that's all dependent on if Jake Locker ends up, you know.
I don't like Tennessee at all. I think that's a very winnable game for the Raiders.
You think? I like the offensive line. I mean, I think they put a lot into that. I mean, it's kind of, you know, the offense, if you put a decent quarterback in that offense, I think that's a pretty, you know, probably a top, 12-10 offense. I mean, if Chris Johnson gets his shit together and if Jake Locker ends up being half decent, I mean, they have a good offensive line. You know, Kenny Britt, you know, when he's on, is pretty good.
Yeah, Kenny Britt when he's on, but you never know when he's on. He's got knee issues. Jake Locker, I don't trust at all. You know, I don't trust him any more than I would trust Pryor, to be honest with you. You know, I mean, Chris Johnson is about the only thing you can rely on that offense. And he's really, if you look at the way he's been the last couple of years, he's like great or terrible. I think that they're going to be kind of a hit or miss all season long. I definitely think they're a beatable team at home, for sure.
No, I agree with you, but I think, you know, that's a team that, you know, if Jake Locker could ever, you know, end up being more than a, you know, 58% passer, I think, you know, they could have a decent team. The next week they go at Dallas. That's probably a loss.
I would think so, but you never know what's going on. But yeah, I'll call that one a probable loss there.
Then they go to the Jets, which is interesting because the Jets are going to be probably neck and neck with the Raiders and Jaguars are probably the worst team in the league. I mean, their defense is not that bad, but their offense is probably even, I mean, it's less exciting, I think, than Oakland's offense, and I'm not really excited about Oakland's offense.
There's no doubt about that.
But
there,
the interesting thing is, as we just said, the Raiders don't ever play well traveling that far. And so that's an interest. I mean, that could really be a 6-3, like really unwatchable game. I mean, that could be a really horrible game.
It could. I'll say this, the Jets defense is better than people give them credit for. They lost in the quarterback controversy and Rex Ryan deal is the fact that defense is going to be pretty good.
Yeah, and Cromartie had a really nice bounce back year last year. I mean, he was great.
They had Sheldon Richardson. They still have Quentin Couples and Muhammad Wilkerson.
Right.
The front seven is good. You know, I think offense will be bad. Defense will keep them in some games. Raiders traveling all the way. I'm gonna call it a winnable game for the Raiders because just the Jets, I think, are contenders with the Raiders for the first pick probably at this stage of our projections. But obviously, travel 2,000 miles. I'll say this: Allen, if Allen is smart, he flies the whole team to the East Coast that week, and even practices out there. I mean, there's got to be plenty of places on the East Coast for his players to adjust to the time zone and everything, just to kind of reduce the travel lag, get them used to the East Coast time. I think it would benefit them to get out there early, you know, in advance of the game, practice out there. I think that would be a smart move for the Giants and for the Jets when they have to travel out there. I think that would be smart.
Yeah, and you know, the week before, they play that Thursday, the 28th, against Dallas, in Dallas. And so, I mean, they'll have a couple extra days to go to New York, and so you're absolutely right. That would obviously be the logical thing to do.
They've got extra days, they're going to have extra rest, so you can pitch it to the players. Like, hey, go home, spend these next couple days, you know, obviously spend these next couple days with your family, because we're heading to the East Coast early, we're going to practice out there. It's a small sacrifice to make on an East Coast time game. When you're traveling, you know, 3,000 miles.
No, I mean, they play Dallas on Thanksgiving, and so...
Exactly.
Right. And then, so after they go at the Jets, which we both pegged as winnable, they have the Chiefs at home, which I don't think it's really... That late in the year, I think Kansas City's probably going to be contending for a playoff spot. I don't think that's a super winnable game. You probably... What do you think?
You know, it's a borderline game. AFC West, obviously, rivals. Raiders playing at home. It's kind of one of those games where I felt more comfortable actually talking about it once it gets here because...
Oh, absolutely.
We'll have a fuller clarity about it. And that's the case for any of these, really. But, you know, I think any home game against an AFC West rival, you have to give you have to give the team a chance. You know, unless there's just overwhelming evidence to suggest otherwise. I'll say that it's a likely loss if everybody's healthy and things go as we think they will, but I'm not ready necessarily to say, well, the Raiders are totally out and out. So, you know, I want to lean saying it's winnable, but I don't think I can right now.
Yeah, I don't think it is. I mean, I think at this point it's probably likely the Raiders will have checked out, and I think Kansas City will be pretty good, so I don't know. Week 16, they're at San Diego. That's obviously a winnable game. Both those teams will have checked out. That's winnable. And then week 17, they have Denver at home. And this game's actually interesting because Denver, I think, you know, universally is thought of as...
Depends on what Denver is playing for, right?
Exactly. They're thought of as the best team in the AFC pretty much universally, I think. Week 17, I mean, given the division, I think the only other team that has a chance to beat them is Kansas City, and I don't think, you know, they're better than Denver. So week 17, I mean, Peyton Manning sits. You know, that could be one of these, you know, games where it's like the Raiders play. If they lose, they get the first pick, and if they win, they get the fourth. And, you know, that might be an interesting game that they probably should lose, you know?
Yeah, that one will be interesting. I don't think with Chet Mailing missing this week, and you know he might miss a couple weeks for all we know. Von Miller up six games. I don't think the Broncos will be going into that final week. With their playoff seed decided. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I mean, the only counter I would have to that is you have to look at how bad the rest of the AFC is, that they might kind of by default, you know. But you're probably
maybe,
right.
Maybe, but I have a feeling that they're going to have a seeding to play for. Unless the seeding is like they're locked into the 2 seed and they can't lose the 2 seed or locked into a lower seed, I could see that. But I have a feeling that they're going to be playing. They have something to play for. You know, and if that's the case, what you can see is like Manning comes out, blows the Raiders out in the first half, and then takes a seat.
Right.
Something like that would be possible. So, you know, consider that, at least right now. Again, these are kind of things you can't really predict until later, but at least right now, you can't say that the Raiders will win a game against Denver.
No, I agree. Okay, so that's the whole schedule. Going through, we have Jacksonville versus San Diego, Pittsburgh, Philly, Tennessee at the Jets, and then the last three at San Diego, and then Kansas City and Denver kind of iffy on. So that's what, 7 games, not including the Kansas City-Denver. So, I mean, that's not saying they're going to win 7 games. Hell, they probably won't win 5 games, but that's 7 games they at least, you know, could conceivably win.
Yeah, that's why I don't like to predict below 4 games, just because I think the law of averages says that most teams are going to win 4 or more games. Obviously, every year there's usually a team that falls below that. Last year there was 2 teams that won fewer than 4 games. But if you look at the Chiefs, they had everything went wrong. Everything has to go wrong. Everything has to go wrong. Just about. And to win 2 games or 1 game or 0 games, you know, even more has to go wrong. I mean, usually you need bad coaching, bad players, you need injuries, you need all that stuff to happen, which is why I usually don't like picking below 4 games. Although I was looking a little bit, you know, recently the league, for whatever reason, the parity in the league is starting to erode a little bit. I don't know if people have noticed this, but the parity in the league is starting to erode a little bit, and I think we're seeing more 3-win teams than we used to see. We're also seeing more like 13-win teams than we used to see. And that used to be I would never go below 4 or above 12, just because there's always that regression towards the mean. And the likelihood is that they're going to be in that range. But we're seeing a little bit more change now.
Yeah.
I predicted 4 wins for the Raiders, obviously with the 2-win margin of error. I'm leaning towards the lower end of that. I'm leaning towards a 3. I don't usually go that low when I'm predicting wins, but I'm leaning towards 3 plus or minus 2, and you know, wins, which would put them between 1 and 5 win range. And I think that's the kind of team that they are right now.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, I wrote that piece for Raiders blog. It seems so long ago now, but it's pretty much out of date. But the point of the piece was that Bill Barnwell, Grant Lynn had done this research, and he'd figured out that since 1990, that I think it was 88% of teams that had finished with four below wins, something like that. Like, a really low win total. I think 88% of the teams got better the next year just by, again, regression, you know, to the mean a little bit. I mean, not regression, I guess, but progression in this case. But, you know, and I'd written that factoring Veldheer, and I thought Flynn would be a lot better and he'd be the quarterback. So, I mean, it's a little out of date now. But, I mean, the point is, it's really, really hard to be going, like, 2-14 every year. And the Raiders are 4-12 last year, and so I'm going to go with 4-12 again. I'm with you. But it wouldn't shock me if they won five games, maybe six. I mean, again, these close games are random, pretty much. If McFadden stays healthy, they should be in a fair amount of games better than what they were last year, you know? And so yeah. I'm kind of with you at 4-12 with a two, you know, win margin, plus or minus.
Yeah, every year something happens, whether it's Raiders or someplace or somebody else, that we don't expect to happen.
Yeah.
The unexpected will happen this year. It's like the desert window. Something unexpected will happen. And we don't know what that is going to be. I mean, I've seen a ton of progression in Terrell Pryor since last year.
I mean, before the season, we were talking about how he should probably move to tight end. I mean, like, it's been really unbelievable the way he's going to grasp the job.
Yeah, I mean, that doesn't mean he's
there yet. But, yeah.
But based on what I saw against San Diego, I'm going to say, Fred, you know what? There's not enough here as a passer. Just not enough. You know, I love his ability to run. I love his athletic ability. I want to use that in some way. But I'm just not sure there's enough there as a passer to really, you know, it's going to take so long and so much time to develop that I'm just not so sure that it's there, you know, considering that that was the end of his second year. And then seeing him in camp this year, I happened to be there on some of his best days in camp, and I was like, "Hey, this guy looks like, you know, a much, much better passer. He still makes mistakes, but, you know, overall, I thought, wow, this guy is really starting to understand, you know, how he has to play the game." He doesn't have to play the game necessarily like everybody else has to play the game either. I mean, he doesn't have to stand back there for 5 seconds and go through six reads and find the open receiver, you know. He's a guy who can read half the field, read one or two guys, read the deep guy, the intermediate guy, and then give him an option. You know, you give him out to scramble or dump it off, but you make that decision. You know, within 3 seconds, you do it. I think that's, you know, the kind of quarterback he can be, and he can be successful doing that. I say this, one of his weaknesses still, if you want to go that way, is that, you know, when he quickly recognizes where he needs to go with football, within 2.5 seconds, he gets it there. You know, quick strike, tight offensive plays are good for him. He's been good doing those. He's been good when he scrambles, but when he stays in the pocket too long behind this Raiders offensive line, you get pressure in his face, he starts throwing off his back, but he doesn't step into throws, and that's where we've seen the interceptions come in. So the Raiders, a good game plan for him, and I'll say this as a kind of a preview for week one, a good game plan for him, give him a quick read, one or two reads on half the field, give him a check down just in case he wants it. You know, if you can't escape pressure, you want that guy there. But tell him, you know, 2.5 seconds, if you're not 100% confident you've got the guy open, just take it and run, because once that pressure comes in his face, his mechanics break down, and that's when the Raiders get in trouble, Pryor gets in trouble. So look for that as being maybe one of the big keys to him, his first start. And I wrote about it this week as well on Bleacher Report, so you can check that out. But one of the big keys for him is Raiders, they have to let him freelance a little bit. So within the game plan, they need to kind of plan for him to scramble, if you will. The read option runs are one thing, but to allow him to pick up, you know, those improv yards, you know, improvisation is unplanned in itself. So how do you plan for improvisation? Well, the good answer is you give him the quick reads and you tell him if it's not there, run. And that's how the Raiders are going to have to treat this. And hopefully that is going to benefit him, because he won't be turning the ball over very much.
Yep. And then, you know, to play devil's advocate, you know, they might have to play that way by default at some point because, you know, without Valdir. I mean, last year, they, according to Football Outsiders, they were the fourth best pass blocking offensive line last year. And a lot of that obviously had to do with Valdir. And now, you know, there's some different parts there, obviously, with him out. And so, but by, you know, by week two or three, you know, if it really is clear that this offensive line is going to be a complete disaster, they may have to go that way by default. And I mean, you know, we talk about things that, you know, can derail seasons and they go 2-14, things have to go wrong. Well, Valdir getting hurt's about as bad as it gets. I mean, I think the only other guy is probably McFadden, that you would say is, you know, for this group of guys, probably a little more valuable than Valdir, although I'm not even sure I'd say that. But, you know, I mean, that's a pretty bad injury. And I think, you know, if we're going to talk about, you know, Pryor, you know, what he can do right, I think, you know, the lack of an offensive line may really, you know, hurt him this year, as it would hurt any quarterback, but.
Yeah, you know, I'd say that I don't think this offensive line is as bad as people think it is.
No, I don't either, but I think the potential for that.
Yeah, I think the Valdir injury is probably the worst. I mean, if you look at what their plan was to start with, the plan was Valdir at left tackle. You make Nix and Bergstrom ballot out at left guard. You know, Wiz, obviously, then Brazel and Barnes. And I think that, yeah, that's a pretty solid offensive line, I would say. I mean, Barnes, obviously, the right tackle is always the whipping boy. But I think Barnes is a pretty good player. You know, solid, reliable type player. And you look at that offensive line, and you're like, hey, I can see that working out okay. Losing Valdir was obviously huge. And then also I didn't mention that, you know, Manelik Watson was a guy I think that they planned on being, you know, taking Barnes' spot and maybe moving Barnes inside the right guard and then bumping Brazel on. That strengthens the whole offensive line. And now you've got, obviously, Manelik, a raw prospect at the tackle, Bergstrom's out, so now Nix is definitely the left guard. He was going to be the right guard, so now Brazel's back in the lineup, and Barnes doesn't have anybody pushing him. So you talk about one injury that affects four out of the five positions on the offensive line, and that was Valdir. And that's what his value to the team really was. And to be real, no one really has two left tackle quality guys. There's not really many teams that do. You know, I'd say that the closest team having two left tackles are the Jaguars, who draft after Luke Jokel and have right. DJ Monroe. I'm not even as confident with the Chiefs do because I'm not a big Brandon Albert fan. I think he'd be better right tackle, but they do have two good solid tackles, I'll give them that, on both ends. So, you know, you don't see many teams that have our left tackle went down, no big deal. You know, but at that said, I think for the Raiders, it really impacted them more than most. So they'd really like to get him back. I think they will get him back second half of the season. But if they don't, here's the other thing. As of right now, they have not yet placed him on injured reserve with the designation to return. When you do it, it's 8 weeks from the time that you do it. So keep this in mind. If the Raiders don't do it this week, they're pushing that time that they can get him back out of week. And they're keeping him on the active roster instead of you know, opening up that roster spot for somebody else. So really interesting. Not really any reason to wait. I don't see any reason to wait at this point. But so far they haven't done it. So we'll see if they end up doing that before the week's out or if they wait. Or, you know, another head scratcher is, well, why wouldn't you do that as soon as possible? But we'll see what they do.
Yep. Should be interesting, to say the least. I mean, we thought probably heading into the season, we probably thought it'd go a little smoother than this, and it seems like it's going to be another pretty rocky year.
I think people are hoping for like a 6-win, maybe better type season.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I think Flynn was really disappointing in preseason to a lot of people. I mean, it's not that anyone expected him to be great, but he was really a lot worse. I mean, I know a lot worse than what I expected him to be.
If you look at his numbers, they actually weren't that bad. The offense didn't move. The offense wasn't moving.
Right.
You know, the whole offense was sluggish and stuck in the mud. And I think his deficiencies, his arm strength deficiencies, became pretty clear. And I think the biggest concern was, you know, behind this offensive line, the protection issues, and then him not being. We kind of expected him, at least short passes should be darts, you know, completions every time for him. The intermediate should be really easy for him. You know, occasional deep shot, and that's kind of what the kind of game that he had to play. But I think he was way too inconsistent with his accuracy in even the short and intermediate zones. And so, in that sense, I think he just didn't run with the job. And like to be honest with you, I think most people, I think the Raiders and even the people that didn't really were playing the tractors, and still thought that they probably would probably still be up prior.
Right.
You know, but I think it's starting to become clear in training camp that the separation between the two as passers wasn't very much, and then obviously with prior you get the dynamic running ability as well, which bails you out when your offense is, you know, your offense is stagnating and the ball's not moving and it's 3rd and 7 and, you know, you run a pass play and everybody's covered. Flynn, that's a sack, punt, field position loss. With prior, he picks up the first down and keeps you going. And at very least changes, you know, maybe you don't score on that drive, but at very least you change the field position battle. And that matters in a game. So,
and, you know, when you're with Veldheer out and their lack of receivers and, you know, that was a weird noise.
That's my daughter. On the podcast, with my daughter. She just came. Her and her cousin just came into the room.
They're excited to talk about the Raiders. They're the only two.
Say hi to everybody in the podcast. Say hi.
Yeah. See, she's not old enough to know that the Raiders are going to suck this year, so she's, like, still in a pretty good mood and everything.
Yeah, she's in a great mood.
Yeah. Well, anyways, I think that'll do it. This is a pretty long... This is one of the longer podcasts we've done in a while, but I think it was a good one. We had a lot of stuff to talk about. Keep updated to our Twitters and Raiders blog. We may have a few changes coming up to the podcast that we're trying to figure out right now, so I don't want to say anything and, you know, kind of promise anything, but just stay tuned and we'll, you know, obviously we'll let you know next week if we're changing anything up. Any plugs or anything, Chris?
Nothing this week. Obviously, keep your eyes out. We'll have good coverage. I'll have good coverage of the Raiders, obviously. I think one of the bigger stories this weekend is obviously Terrell Pryor coming out of Sunday. So definitely have some analysis, especially next week. I probably will have a complete breakdown of how he does. So keep an eye out for that, obviously. That's pretty much it.
Yep. I don't have anything. We will talk to you guys next week, and go Raiders.